This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So we know the term, it takes a village. But what if we took the village model for when we grow older instead of when we're growing up? Ageing in place is a term now that's becoming more common, growing older where you live with the help that you need. And the spotlight has well and truly been thrown onto aged care again today. But many of us now, maybe when we're in our 50s or 60s, are starting to think about our last quarter in life and considering how and where we want to live. Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning. Kirsten Diprose joining you from ABC Warrnambool. Kirsten, if possible, right, and if healthy enough, so if everything ticks all of the right boxes, maybe some of us don't want to move into a typical aged care home and we're starting to think outside the square. So there is a small but growing movement of people that are created DIY retirement villages. So anything from tiny homes together to maybe buying a large property or a group of villas together with friends or with family and growing old together. This is a real conversation that's starting to happen.
Certainly, Rochelle, and good morning to you. I'd argue that most people don't actually ever want to be in aged care. You know, it's not a phase of your life that you look forward to, essentially. You might look forward to retirement, but the idea of moving into an aged care facility is usually not high up on people's, you know, wish lists. And of course, this is a big topic of conversation all morning, I think. Everyone's been talking about this task force that's been reviewing the arrangements for aged care. And of course, they've rejected now that idea of a levy to cover the sector's costs. And instead of saying that we need to be paying based on personal wealth. And I feel like this has really ignited the generational debate. It's ignited the kind of concept of how much should the state pay for you and what should they pay for? Because the government currently funds 75% of residential aged care and 95% of home care. And financially, it's not sustainable. So we need to have these conversations, and I'm excited to have this conversation, Rochelle, because it's really looking at the bigger picture, the whole village model.
The village model is fascinating, really, even if you took a street, right? So you may not commit to buying a group of units with friends, although we are going to hear from someone in just a moment. There are a group of friends that were friends for over a decade, holidayed together, and then they said, you know what, let's make this more permanent. Let's grow old together. So not everyone is going to take it to that length, but you may have people in your street, in your community, where you start to think about, well, how can we share resources? Maybe it's sharing everything from a little bit of home help, a cleaner, being able to help someone with your shopping, pooling those resources together so that people can age in place longer. There are communities that are happening overseas where tiny homes, I know tiny homes is something that is so fraught here in Victoria, but people are creating their own villages. So whether or not that will start to happen as people age. And the other thing is, Kirsten, we're living longer now. And what 60 or 70 years of age looked like when we were growing up is vastly different now. Maybe that's because I'm getting older and I don't want to admit the truth, but 70 years young now is very, very different. So I'll be curious today to see how small but growing this number of people are that maybe haven't taken the first step, but are at least thinking about what if we bought a house together? What would that look like? What would you need to consider? What contracts would you need to have in place? How possible is it to do aged care super privately, almost like doing it on your own?
Yeah. I mean, I would really like to hear what communities have done with each other or even streets. So my mum recently fell and injured herself quite substantially. And she lives in New South Wales. So I, of course, flew up there a couple of times and helped her out, helped to get set up at home, but had to come back here with my young family. And but the street has really rallied around her. And look, she's known a couple of her neighbours, but I actually wrote letters and dropped some in the letterbox because my mum didn't want to ask for help. Oh. And I think that can be a part of the problem. She's like, oh, I don't want to be a burden on anyone. And they've all rallied around with, you know, putting her bins out for her, you know, running up to the shops to get anything if she needs it, all of that sort of stuff. And just even just checking in on her, just how you going, do you need anything? And it's fantastic. And
it's the village model.
It's the village model. It sounds so simple, really.
So maybe you've thought about it. Maybe you've even had the conversation with family or with friends. Would you consider buying into or maybe taking it to the next level and growing old, growing aging in place together with friends or family? And if so, what would that look like?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt here with you in Melbourne. Kirsten Dipro is your co-host this morning, joining you from ABC Warrnambool. And yet again, the spotlight today has been thrown onto aged care with all of its issues and flaws and what it will look like into the future. Well, maybe you've already been thinking about that on a personal level and you've come up with your own solution. How possible would it be to create a village model with friends or with family, almost like a DIY retirement village?
And joining us now is Dr. Kathleen Brasher, who's based in Wodonga at the John Richards Centre for Rural Ageing Research at La Trobe University. Welcome to the program, Kathleen.
Thank you, Kirsten. Hello, Rochelle.
Morning.
I'm sure you've been following the news very closely today with a task force, but this is an area you've been looking at from a while and with a much more holistic approach than, I suppose, the current debate that's happening now. Tell us about what sort of communities you look at and investigate that can support older people.
I've been part of a global movement that's called the Age Friendly Cities and Communities Work. And that started for us in Victoria in 2007 when the state government funded the Municipal Association of Victoria and Council on the Aging in Victoria. And they worked with the University of Melbourne, which is where I was at that time, to take part in global research looking at what makes a city, a community, a village, a good place to grow old in, what helps and what gets in the way. So we took part in that research looking at Maribyrnong and we spoke to residents there. We had groups in Vietnamese, we had groups with carers, we had groups with older people of a range of abilities, as well as service providers and council. And we contributed to that global guide, which has now given us a really good idea about what the qualities of the community, what qualities a community needs to have to be a good place to grow up and grow old. Because when we make communities that are age-friendly, that are friendly for all of us, particularly as we grow old, then they're going to be great for everyone.
Absolutely.
People with disabilities, people with dementia, young children. So we know that to create a healthy place to grow old in, you need a built environment that's easy to navigate, that you have walkable streets, you have public transport, you have houses that are not Peter Pan houses, but houses that we can absolutely grow old in and have bouts of illness in, you know, a broken foot when we're footy training as young people right the way through. But also a social environment that's welcoming where people feel respected, people feel included, they can do whatever they think matters to them, that they don't feel left out or unwelcome.
Absolutely. Kathleen, stay with us because Jan's called from Kyabram. Good morning.
Good morning, Rochelle. I'm a recently retired registered nurse. 20 years ago, three of us who trained together at Epworth were visiting one of our friends down in Bankston. And she had a unit down there and three of us had gone driving and having a look at some houses around the area in Mount Eliza. Anyway, I came across this lovely old home and it was really ideal for accommodating three people. It had three separate living areas, three en suite areas, And I came back and suggested, you know, we should do something like this, because amongst the three of us, there was a divorcee and a recently widowed girl, and I'm single. I said, we should get together, we can maintain our own anonymity, and we can still be together and care for each other. Now, in the last just over 20 years, one of those nurses has unfortunately died. And at her funeral, I said to this other person that was there at the time, I said, see, we should have done this when we spoke about it, because we could have cared for, you know, our colleague that had died. And I sort of think that, well, I guess I've been thinking about the model that you're talking about for some time, and I think it's an excellent idea. So I really hope.
Oh, Jan, that's, yeah, and I'm sorry to hear about your friend as well, but you guys were ahead of the curve. I mean, this is something, and Kathleen, I'll put this back to you, especially for women and older women. We know that women mm-hmm. are the fastest growing demographic of homeless people because of things like lack of super. If they've been caring for families, they don't have any money, they don't have any backing, they don't have any property. So for someone like Jan and for two of her friends to look at ways to age in place and grow old together, should we be finding ways to support that?
Oh, absolutely. I think we need a multiplicity of ideas. But that needs to happen in a policy framework that recognises the stage of growing old rather than jumping from working to aged care, that there's this whole segment of life where we don't have any federal or state government leadership around. We don't have any good policies and good directions, good measures of what matters and what good housing looks like. What does our transport network look like that services that extraordinary large population of people with that are incredibly different and have very different needs and very different life experiences. And you're right, some of the most vulnerable in that group are older women without income who would benefit from having that guidance that enables those range of ideas to be put on the table, but that they're happening within a society, within a community, within a local government area that is itself age-friendly.
Kathleen, when you talk about, say, policies, do the current policies, and not just policies, but that kind of, you know, bureaucratic system that you enter into if there's aged care or, you know, pensions, does it recognise, you know, relationships that are different to sort of being a single or a couple?
Yes.
Because I know through, you know, friends of mine who are older who have, you know, had to configure things differently. It doesn't really recognise that perhaps your three friends living together. How do we need to think about that?
I think we need much better economic modelling and legal advice on these things. You know, you shouldn't have to every individual person go to get. I mean, obviously, we all need our separate legal advice, but there should be some overarching policy that reflects that diversity. But we don't have any federal policies on that period of life between finishing paid work, and considering that, you know, we look at paid work finishing quite young comparatively, and going into aged care.
Dr. Kathleen Brasher is with you. She's based in Wodonga at the John Richards Centre for Rural Ageing and Research at La Trobe University. This from Alan. It says, my dad is 94. He still lives at home alone in Yarrawonga. He's very capable. He has his meals delivered every day. He keeps his house and garden neat and tidy. He has a lot of family support. My brother drives him to his doctor's appointments. I can't picture him in a retirement home. But others saying this is happening, and it's based in the Macedon Ranges. We started building tiny homes on wheels last year. We decided to have a focus on accessibility and working towards the gold standard accessibility guidelines with things like larger bathrooms and grab rails, zero thresholds and plenty of circulation space. I think there's a need for these tailor-made special little places. So have you thought about maybe growing old with friends and family, the village model, so to speak? Have you spoken to a neighbour or to a friend about maybe ageing in place together?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Michelle Hunt here with you in Melbourne. Kirsten Dipper is your co-host this morning, joining you from ABC Warrnambool. And also joining us on the line, Dr. Kathleen Brasher, who's at the John Richards Centre for Rural Ageing and Research at La Trobe University. As we look at different ways to potentially consider where we age, this text says it's a great idea, but it's very different for three experienced nurses to move in and look after each other rather than just three people, none of us of which are trained. Daniel Weinstein pretty much took this idea up with his wife and with other friends, of which they holidayed with for a long time. So you've got six friends, Daniel, and you've pretty much created your own retirement village, and it's been going really well. Where did the idea first come from?
Oh, the idea occurred when we were having a holiday together, and my wife, Eve, just suggested that this was so nice, maybe we could do it together over a longer period of time. We were all approaching retirement age and trying to figure out what we were going to do. And when you, we were all living in Sydney and had financial advisors telling us we all needed a lot more money than we had in order to retire comfortably, but we decided if we lived together and moved to the country, maybe we could do it. And it's worked incredibly well.
So we've been
in this house now that we built for that purpose for 15 years.
Wow. So a purpose-built house. How big is it?
Oh, it's large. It's we had a house designer who called it the motel when he designed it. We have three wings. Each one has a large bedroom ensuite, an office, and a deck. That's our private area, and then we share the living area and the kitchen area, and share meals three or four nights a week as well.
I love that it's been such a success, Daniel. What did you need to think about? Because there's a lot of texts coming in saying this is such a good conversation to have. This is something that I need to think about and to consider. But when you sat down with your wife and with your friends, what did you need to consider? There are things like, what if somebody gets ill, or what if somebody wants to move out? What if someone requires more care than the other person? Did you need to kind of almost have maybe it is a contract. I'm not sure.
It is a contract, actually. We got a lawyer and worked it out. But mostly all that ended up in the contract was what to do if someone dies or someone wants to leave. What do we do with the property and how do we handle that? And do we replace them? Do we not replace them? So we have a document about that. But when we were planning this, we were all in our 50s. And now we're all in our 70s. One of us has turned 80. And all of those things were so theoretical when we were in our 50s. We're starting to think a little more seriously about them now. Nobody is needs care at this point, but we don't know how that's going to work. We haven't figured it out entirely. The idea of caring for one another is great, but when it comes down to it, if someone, say, got dementia who needs a great deal of care, is everybody going to be able to do that? And so we don't know. We don't know how that's going to work. We're hoping we have another 5 years here.
There's a text saying the best exotic marigold hotel, which I like. How do you work things out on a day-to-day basis? You know, you say you share meals, and obviously you need to share those household responsibilities. How does that happen?
Mostly by just agreement, very casually. We have a sign-up sheet to say whether you're going to be around for dinner on those nights, and it's sort of between the couples, it sort of rotates who's going to be doing the cooking. And that's just sort of evolved over time as a way of doing it, and it just works very well. It's a little more complicated as people get special diets, but other than that, we're pretty good.
I suppose, why not a retirement village? When you're sitting down working this out, there are retirement villages out there. Why didn't you go down that route?
Well, the idea of a retirement village has never really appealed to any of us, I don't think. And that may actually be out of ignorance, out of just sort of the prejudice that a retirement village is just hanging around with old folk. But we just seem to like the idea of just having a little bit more control over the way things are going. And it's worked out really well. Like right now, I'm sitting outside looking over at some cows and a river, and beautiful and sunny, and like it's just a lovely place to live that's ours, that we just know and we'll have it as long as we do.
I am so happy that it's been a success. And as myself and all of my friends, as we all head into our 50th year around the sun this year, I feel like we might all be starting to have these conversations sooner rather than later. So, Daniel, I'm taking everything on board that you say very closely at the moment. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Daniel Weinstein there with his wife Eve, six other friends, have done it for over 15 years, Dr. Kathleen Brasher. And there's lots of texts now coming in saying this is a really great idea, but, you know, do you need to have money and lots of disposable income to be able to do this? What happens, for example, if you're on the pension or you only have one income or if you are renting? How do we make these options more possible for more people if it's what they want to do? Do you believe?
Yeah, there's a great example. There's a few examples globally. The one that's coming to mind most strongly after listening to your conversation is what's called the socialist housing model in Quebec in Canada. And the one that I'm thinking mostly of was built on church land. So it was land that the church wasn't using. It was right beside the school. It was built by money that was raised from the community and matched with the local community bank. So it was one-for-one funding. It has a range of rooms in it, from bed sits right the way up to three-bedroom apartments. It's about 20 rooms all up. All of the services within the unit are done by the people themselves. So you've got to be over 70 to go into one. So there's a wait list. The facility itself is managed by the community, and it's managed by people under 65. And the only paid position they have is the chef. And they bring the school kids in to help in their vegetable garden and to cook in the kitchen. One of the residents is the gym instructor for the town. So, we can think really creatively about these, and that allows people with little or no income to come in without any barrier to living in that sort of community setting.
Kathleen, given the conversation today with, aged care being really examined and, the task force recommending that a levy shouldn't be required of taxpayers, and that really looking at the idea that older people are wealthier in general than previous generations, and because the taxpayer base is declining, you know, that there needs to be some sort of alternative way of funding this. Have we always had this idea as a society that the government will support us when it comes to aged care?
We haven't really formulated in some ways our ideas as a society because we've ignored growing old. And aged care came about in this country because we removed young people and children from poor houses, which left the poor and older who couldn't work. So they were lumped. So poverty, later life and illness were all lumped together as the same thing. So if you were wealthy in Melbourne in the 1900s, you weren't considered poor or old, so you stayed home and you were cared for at home, or you were cared for in a private arrangement, a private hospital. You certainly couldn't have gone to a public hospital because you weren't allowed to be admitted to a public hospital if you're over 65 without the consent of the medical supervisor. So we haven't really come to terms with that. We haven't really sat back and said, who is it that the government supports? Who is it that the private sector supports? We handed everything over to the private sector and said the government will fund the private sector to manage.
And I just wonder whether the idea of private sector will get uber hyper private, as you know, there's lots of discussion today about saying, well, the baby boomers can pay their way, they're wealthier now than ever before, so if they have the money, then maybe they're going to fund it and do it privately and do it on their own with friends or with family, in a style and in a place and in an environment in which they see fit. It's been fascinating to speak with you today, Kathleen. Thank you so much. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Kathleen Brasher from John Richards Centre in Rural Ageing and Research at La Trobe University. Kirsten, these texts, I've got three cousins with their spouses all in their 70s in the northern part of Italy who very much live like this on a day-to-day basis. In other countries, I'm guessing it's not that uncommon way of life. Maybe we're having to reinvent this. That's from Paul in Preston. And another from Karen, it says, it's so great to have these conversations. I'm 58 and as a woman and in the biggest homelessness demographic, we need action now. I wish there were websites with things like flatmates, especially for older women. It's not a crazy concept. Initially, when we, you know, were starting to think about today's show, I thought, oh, wow, you know, imagine. But then when you start to break it down, you think, well, why can't older people just share a home together, either if it's something that they purchase or if it's something that they rent? Pool their resources, like we heard from Daniel. Pool your resources, pool your money in some way and have more help, have more assistance. And then on top of it, we haven't even discussed the idea of the loneliness epidemic that we're living through as well.
Yeah. But even on a community level, I think we all benefit when there's just a mixed demographic. And I think we're moving away slowly from institutions. You know, you only have to look at the way we used to care for people with intellectual disabilities or even physical disabilities. And it used to be just, you know, put people in an institution. Whereas now we're saying, no, actually, people should all be able to enjoy the broader society. We shouldn't be locked away in institutions or effectively in our homes because we can't participate in society. So I'm really excited that these conversations are happening because they need to.
And they're happening in all different places. I'm getting so many texts of people saying this is actually happening. Joyce is in North Melbourne. Hi, Joyce.
Hello. I currently live in a place of particular housing model called Abbey Field, and it seems like nobody's ever heard of it. There are six or eight of them across Melbourne and then across other cities in Australia as well. It's a model that started in the UK and then came to Australia. I'll describe the particular one that I'm living in. It's actually, this is a converted church. It's turned into bedrooms and en suites for 10 people. Mm-hmm. And 10 people is the general model. And so you've got 10 people over 55 living in a house together. And they have a cook, a housekeeper, who cleans the shared spaces and cooks all your meals for you. That's just something.
And that's how it works, yeah. And I've found that the running theme here, Joyce, thank you, is if you have all of those extra things that can be trickier as you get older, so the cooking and the cleaning, but then being able to share that with people as well. There's an organisation called WINC, which is Older Women and Co-Housing. We've built 30 units plus a common house, a workshop and community gardens, and that's in Castlemaine. It's a fabulous concept. So maybe you've had this conversation with friends or with family. Would you consider pooling your resources, moving in together and ageing in place together?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Kirsten Dipros with you. What if we took the village model, Kirsten? What if we took the village model and didn't think about it in terms of how we raise our children, but we took the village model in terms of how do we look after each other as we age? That can be sharing resources like cleaners in your street or taking it to the next level like Daniel and actually moving in with friends. But the last time we spoke about aged care and who it fits and how it fits for us individually, we got so many calls from people who identify as LGBTQIA+ and said, I don't feel like there is somewhere for me to grow old. So when we look at our aged care system and if we're looking at doing this individually, that's a whole other level that we need to discuss. Ro Allen is the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commissioner. Ro, I know that you did a lot of work previously when you're the LGBTQIA+ commissioner looking at rainbow accredited aged care. But when we break this down, for people who identify as queer, as same sex, is there a place for them? Do you feel like maybe this model that we're discussing today might actually be a really attractive concept for some people?
I think it absolutely is, and I think it's already happening. You talked about the Castlemaine experience. I know there's another one in Hepburn, again, a Rainbow-accredited aged care facility that kind of markets to or you know, goes out and actually tries to attract LGBTIQ people. I think really, you know, queer people don't want to live in ghettos. They just want to live somewhere where they feel safe.
Yeah.
How hard is that at the moment, Ro, whether that is in aged care or, you know, in a kind of living arrangement where everyone is pooling resources?
Well, I think it just makes sense. I've been listening in and just talking, you were talking with Dr. Kathleen there about we ignore getting old. For many, particularly gay men, they didn't think they would live past the 80s, so they didn't plan for aged care. You know, I talked to many senior queer men who just don't have a plan. So moving in with others, particularly if you're estranged from your family or you don't have children, because we often rely on our kids, starting to do that more and more myself, adult children. So if you don't have those kind of networks, then, yeah, definitely the broader community is important. And you're talking about the loneliness epidemic. That is a huge thing for LGBTI queers.
And age, it sneaks up on us, Ro, doesn't it?
Well, aging is a privilege, my
100%.
Friends would say.
Couldn't agree more. But all of a sudden you're like, yeah, right, wow, okay.
Now what?
Where's my plan? I need to start to think about this, and what does my future look like, and where do I want to be? That might be geography, or it might be who you're with, and what's the reality? What is the relationships that I have with my friends and my families? And you were talking about having those plans in place. I mean, that's something we need to discuss. I'm just wondering whether you feel like the LGBTQI plus community has those same securities, you know, whether it be contracts, whether it be recognition. I mean, of course, we've had marriage equality, but when we look at those things that are maybe taken for granted by some people of, okay, well, we want to write up a contract around X, Y, and Z because 8 of us or 10 of us are going to live together. Do we have equality there?
Yeah, we do now in Victoria, thank goodness. It certainly wasn't in my grandmother's day. My grandmother was a lesbian in Wangaratta, and she didn't have any of that when she left her husband. So we have come a long way. There's always more work to do. We've done some work in Victoria about end-of-life plans for LGBTIQ people, but marriage equality obviously has helped a lot. We have equality there now, but, of course, not everybody chooses to get married. So it's important that people do get a plan and obviously tell people what their intentions are and write it down.
Ro, I want to draw on your expertise in sort of policy and government framework. Obviously, you work in the state sort of system, and the issue that's been in the news today has been very much federal about, you know, how do we fund aged care with the growing ageing population. But where should we be thinking about, you know, putting money from a government perspective? We've got so many texts talking about, you know, potentially supporting different models of housing where people can live together more easily, or putting funding into kind of adjacent streams rather than this kind of institutionalised care for specific issues being aged care in this instance.
Yeah, sure. Look, first and foremost, of course, in any aged care, it's illegal to discriminate based on someone's sexuality, gender. And we know that a lot of services are doing the best they can, but the policy position is try to keep people in their houses as long as possible and address the loneliness issue. Mm. There is one government-funded service called Switchboard, which has got an out-and-about visitors program, and I was really excited to see that be expanded by the federal government in funding. There's currently 120 people that get visitors. So they're community volunteers. You can register to volunteer, but you can also, they're open for taking extra referrals now for older people if you fit into that category and you'd like a visitor. But they're the sort of supports, they're not that expensive. You're using volunteers, which is great, connecting people, and they're the kind of early buffer to make sure people are safe. And that, you know, those volunteers can also help people make that plan. So I think early intervention is fantastic. That's would be much better than, you know, down the track trying to come up with policy issues. And obviously aged care is difficult and expensive to fund. We know that. And those debates will rage on about how we do that. But making sure people are connected, that people are visited, they're really key fundamentals. Yeah.
Would you do it, Ro? I'm thinking about my best mates. There's six of us that are really, really close and have been forever. We holiday together, right? Like Daniel did. We have holidayed together for decades. I could imagine doing this with my mates.
I'm in. You had me at hello.
I know.
I'm an extrovert, though. So I don't know. My wife is the introvert, would love it so much. But
you need your own space, right? You need your own bathrooms. Like when you holiday, you're like, okay, well, there's got to be two bathrooms and whatnot. But there's, as long as it's the right crew, right? If you pick the people properly and you discuss it and you're up front, I think there's something to this.
I think there is too. But I also think that intergenerational stuff is great too. If I was going to live in a community like that, I would want older people than me. I'd want younger people than me, you know. And we've all got different skills and things to bring. So, you know, the older people might bring the actual land and the resources, but the younger people might, you know, be able to do some more of the
That's something we don't do well here. We're slowly, you know, starting to think outside the square in terms of how we build. But we don't do intergenerational well in Australia, not compared to other countries that where it sort of just goes hand in hand, like it's just what you do.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the LGBTI community has got the runs on the board there. I think we do the intergenerational stuff quite well. Yeah, I think we can always do it better, but I mean this program is never short of, you know, younger queer people putting up their hand to sit with their elders and be friends. Like I can think of 20 or 30 people that have had great experiences. And of course, you're not helping them, you're learning and growing yourself. It's just not just one way, that intergenerational connection.
Ro Allen, as always, thanks so much for your time.
Lovely to be here. Thank you.
Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commissioner. I mean, when we think about taking a village, Kirsten Diprose, intergenerational is 100% a part of this conversation. And I agree with Ro too. You probably, you know, you would want young people around. You do want different ages. That's what makes life interesting. So maybe when we start to think about the village model.
The village.
Right?
But I see it as the same for like with when you have children. Sometimes it feels like you get locked away. I know it did when I had young kids. It felt like I was just locked in my house for a couple of years.
I was the loneliest I have ever been, I think, in that first year.
Because society kind of just didn't have spaces where I could easily go out to with a baby and a toddler and feel okay because they're going to be loud and messy and all of those things. So, but I really relied on multi generations to help me, to come visit me, all of those things. And that's what we've got to do for all of our stages of life. And we never know when something bad might happen in our life. You know, you could have an accident or a chronic illness, and that's why we need the village. And you can be friends with people from other ages, you know.
Of course you can.
I had a great friend who, unfortunately, she's passed now, but she was in her 90s. I became friends with her when she was 91. And it was a great friendship. So, I love that. You know, you learn so much from different generations.
If you've had this conversation with friends or family, what was their reaction? Is this something that you would consider? Would you take that village model and would you age in place together with other people? Create your own retirement village.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt here in Melbourne. Kirsten Dipper is your co-host this morning, joining you from ABC Warrnambool. A huge spotlight yet again thrown on to aged care and what the future of aged care will look like and how we will fund that. Have you started to think about where you want to age, where you want to grow old? And maybe you want to do that with a group of friends, or maybe you want to pool resources with people in your street. Maybe you're already doing it, something as simple as sharing a cleaner or a gardener or getting some help when it comes to doing groceries. Kirsten, this text that says, I'm all for shared living into my old age in principle, but I just don't know if I could share again. And I don't know if anyone would want to share with me. That's the thing, right? Because we're all scarred by a dodgy flatmate that we've had.
In our 20s, usually.
In our 20s. Right? So this is different. We're older, we know what we want, you would have it, it would be formalised, it would be in a contract. Would you do it?
Oh, yeah. I have one of my besties who we said to each other, if we never married, we would live together. And now the contract, we're both married, is now that, you know, if we're both on our own, later in life, we'll probably, yeah, live together because we're good mates.
My mum and her best friend did. And late 50s, my mum moved back in with her best friend, who is now known as Nana Julie, our surrogate Nana. They did. They lived together in their late 50s, had a little separate home set up out the back. But otherwise, I don't know, you know, where my mum, she couldn't live with me at the time. I was in a one-bedroom flat. Like, so this is something that people do. And, you know, I did a show just recently on the value of friendship and whether or not we take friendships as seriously as our other relationships. You know, do we put the value on friendships enough? So if you've got someone that you've been friends with, you know, for 50 years, then there's going to be trust, right?
Yeah. If you've travelled with them, I've travelled with this friend, so I feel like it would work. And we've also lived together in the past, in our 20s, but I reckon, you know, 70-year-olds, we could do it as well.
Lots of texts that are coming in saying, well, we need to look at the idea of granny flats or tiny homes and how they work into this conversation. And that's something that's happening in other parts of the world. Elle Patton is a tiny home advocate and she's the co-founder of the Australian Tiny House Association. Elle, the idea of creating a village, I mean, this would be music to your ears. It's probably something that you've tried to do for a long time. I know tiny home villages is something that many councils don't really want to sign off on. Is this something for retirement that you could see working, tiny home villages for us as we age?
Yeah, good morning, ladies. Yeah, absolutely, I do. I think that it's layered with quite a few complex issues. So first of all, council regulations and resistance aside, to be done well, it needs to have, like you were saying before, the appropriate services built in. It needs to have the appropriate infrastructure. It needs to have the ageing needs of the people in that retirement village in mind, accessibility, care service access, all of those things. But there's also another side to that as well. And I like what you were saying about the multi-generational living. Mm. Creating more of a village in urban areas by allowing tiny houses, say, for the family to have a unit out the back so they can support someone in place. There's been research that's demonstrated that when the elderly go to a retirement home prematurely, it affects their longevity, how long they live. So, and those that remain connected to community and connected to family for longer and in familiar environments, they live a longer and happier life and a healthier life. So, yes, I think it can be done. I think it's maybe it's three models in my mind. One, care at home, maybe support worker, even living in a tiny house with somebody at home if they own their own house outright. But, yeah, look, at the moment, unfortunately for the elderly on low income, 70% plus of rentals are unaffordable and unobtainable to maintain at the moment. So it does put us a strain. So yes, perhaps not having somebody in there, a paid carer, might not be a good model for them. But then there's also retirement estates. And I think that's where the tiny house could fit. But high care, maybe a bit more challenging because of all those...
The red tape.
Yeah, exactly. And all of the care services that need to go into high care. With medical staff on standby sort of thing. You know, if somebody has Alzheimer's and dementias, you need to consider potentially a gated community or something like that. So, yes, I think it does have a lot of potential to help with the ageing population crisis and helping people age well and be connected to a community, socially, emotionally and mentally improving their well-being.
I think that's so important when people have to move away. You know, a lot of people have to go and move to where their kids are living, which might be a completely different area to where all their friends are. A couple of messages here saying there's a tiny home village in Shepparton and that retirement villages don't always allow dogs and things like that. So I suppose, is there greater flexibility with the tiny home?
Well, when dealing with an open-minded council, so like Serco Chow, Shire, for example, they're running a trial period for tiny houses and implementing them in that environment. Esperance in WA, I've done a lot of great work working with the Australian Tiny House Association there to test the model of tiny houses in their local area. And also Mount Alexander Shire has also shifted their rules somewhat as well. I think that there is that potential, but look, like any other form of housing, they can be done well.
Yeah, that's right.
Done poorly. You know, you do need those, you do need to consider appropriate black water and grey water management, for example, where the quality of the water that is in those places, especially with the elderly.
Yeah, and even as the text earlier said, you know, you can build them to suit your needs as well, so they can have all of the support and all of the assistance that you need from rails and whatnot. Elle, it's always fascinating. Any chance for me to talk tiny homes, I'm more than happy to do it. Elle Patton there, tiny home advocate and co-founder of the Australian Tiny House Association. There's some really interesting texts that are coming through. I just love people and what they do and how they think outside the square. This, at my mum's retirement village, two ladies pooled their funds and they bought into an affordable retirement village together. So they're both still working, but they're happily living together. And another that says, my sister lives next door to my mother in a sort of compound, inverted commas, set up. Recently, she said jokingly, when mum goes, we should redevelop and all of us siblings should come and live there. We all reacted at the time and joked, saying, good Lord, could you imagine living with you guys into our retirement? I'd rather have my teeth pulled out. But you know what? After this fascinating conversation, I feel like it might be worth considering. Thanks for the show. So maybe it doesn't have to be with friends. It could be with siblings. It could be with family.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And there is a text here that's saying their mum would no sooner live in a tiny home than fly to the moon. There's no way she would get rid of her belongings and live in such a small space. But it's about having options. And I think that's probably where the conversation has been lacking, that the public conversation, is that by just having aged care and those institutions as almost the only option, you know, I sound so silly, but we're not all the same, and we're certainly not all the same as we get older either.
And it's, as we started this conversation today, it's looking at well, it takes a village. Deb's in Richmond. Morning, Deb.
Good morning, Jacinta, and thanks for this terrific conversation. You're right about creating options and this conversation is expanding all our ideas about options. And I was remembering when you said about the isolation of being a young parent. And we used to go camping with several other families every Easter. We sat around a campfire, bemoaning the dinner cooking and the thankless children who hated what we cooked. And so we made a commitment to start cooking each week. And on one night of the week, we all lived in Richmond, 5 minutes apart from each other. And we cooked for one night only out of those four nights. We cooked for each family, so four moths of whatever we were cooking. We had enough Pyrex glass jars, you know, to go around and drop off. And the rules were simple. It had to be under a certain price point. We'd obviously made catering for diets, and we walked in between 6 and 6:30.
I love this.
And all you had to do was set the table and have a glass of wine waiting.
Oh, and like those.
You didn't have to stop. You just put the food down and off you went.
And what you had. Deb, it's not a great line, so we might leave you there, but I love that's the classic village, Kirsten, isn't it? You know, well, let's find a way to support each other and, okay, we all only have to cook one night a week, but you cook for the X amount of people in your street or within your mother's group or whatever it may be. What I've loved about today is that people are starting to think creatively. It puts a focus on true friendship and trusting true friendship. It puts a spotlight on how older women can age and can age with dignity and can age with safety as well and with security. And this is something that needs to be discussed. Not everyone is going to age with a partner. Not everyone is going to age with family there to support you. So when we think about aged care and what that looks like, it can be done with friends if it's done properly and it's a true friend.
And we're also unhooking the conversation from chronological age, because 70 can look very different for people and 80 these days. And we need to think about that differently to how we have in the past. And again, where the government comes in is another role. Like, we're too large a society now with too large an ageing population to just expect the government to be able to step in.
If you've enjoyed today's conversation, you can share it with friends, with family. Maybe it's a good conversation starter if you want to bring this up with a friend. So don't forget, the Conversation Hour is also a podcast. We've also done programs on how to discuss aged care option with your loved ones. We've done entire programs on tiny homes as well. So go to the ABC Listen app, subscribe to the Conversation Hour and pass it on. There's heaps of conversations on this. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care and we'll speak to you soon. We'll